email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
51551 0870 32 32 32 for your WhatsApp messages. Now, the forest that won't forget is a 16-acre site in County Clare, and it's a living artwork dedicated to the legacy of the brave women affected by the failure of the cervical check programme. This ambitious project is the result of a long-term collaboration between a core group of five of the 221 Plus group with artists Fiona Whelan and John Conway. And Lynn Fenton from the 221 Plus group is with us in studio, as is Fiona Whelan, one of the artists. Good afternoon to you both.
Good afternoon, Ray.
Hi, Ray.
Good to see you.
You too.
So we're going to be talking about the forest. We're going to be talking about you, Lynn. The forest that won't forget. I love the name because immediately I thought of Vicky Phelan and her defiance in the face of authority. And this forest isn't going to let anybody forget.
Never. And we don't ever want anyone to forget about, in particular, what Vicky did for us. And also as a way to commemorate all of the women and families affected. Yeah. In this.
And Fiona, you're an artist, but you didn't grow this forest because it's been there for hundreds of years.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you got off lightly on this project.
Yeah, well, myself and John were brought in 2021 at the request of members who had the idea to develop an artwork to commemorate, to memorialise the various losses that had happened. And I suppose the invitation to us was to spend time with people, go slowly, engage, think and listen out for ideas, build an understanding of what had happened, different experiences, and then try to figure out what could a creative, artistic response be to this. And so over many years and lots of thinking, and it was the core group, but also the wider membership, we travelled around the country and engaged with lots of people, and the core group and ourselves as artists led that. And yeah, I suppose over time, the idea of a living artwork, a national living artwork, emerged. And yes, now we have the forest that won't forget.
Yeah, and it looks amazing. I've looked at the videos and we'll get back to that anon. But first, Lynn, your story. Where are you from?
Cadorglan, County Kerry.
Born and bred?
Born and bred.
Right.
Born and bred. Mighty spot, really, to be fair.
Married?
Married, yes, to Michael Fenton. And we have two lovely boys, Dennis and Daniel.
What age are they?
17 and 14.
Okay. Yeah. So you were watching the goings on with Jade Goody.
Yes.
And her horrific story.
Yes.
And it sort of shocked you into action.
It did. I really resonated with her story. She was around a similar age to me at the time, and kind of said, oh gosh, I better kind of keep on top of this, you know. I wouldn't have known too much about it really before that. So I kind of promised myself then, I suppose, okay, look, I'll keep on top of this. And I went for my smear tests regularly, almost to the month, every time that I was called.
It was an annual thing.
Yeah, it was an annual thing. It was kind of every 3 years then at one stage.
Yeah.
And but every time I was called, you know, I got the letter and I booked it straight away. So.
And you got the test results back saying?
Yes. For a good few years, I suppose I was up and down with CIN3 and CIN1, which is, you know, normal. There were changes in the cervix. And then I was, I had four clear smears within 5 years. But I still knew that something was wrong because, I'll retrace my steps. I didn't know something was wrong, but I was being called back all the time for a smear test. It was like, okay, kind of, oh, why? And then it was like, oh, look, they're just checking to be sure kind of thing. You know, I'd never really invested too much into it. And so I just went along. You got a call back, went along again. There was a couple of times when they were taking biopsies and insufficient biopsies were taken. And so you'd have to go back again for another biopsy. But all in all, they were coming back clear. So I was like, oh, that's okay. Not worried. And then in 2015, one of the smears, they called me back in after one of the smears, only about maybe 6 or 8 weeks afterwards. And they told me that I had cervical cancer. And I was floored. I was like, what? I just couldn't believe it. Just really couldn't believe it. And I didn't understand how it had got to that or...
So just for people who don't understand, Lynn, the idea of the testing is that they catch it early so they can get precancerous cells, and the treatment for that is pretty okay and the outcomes are great.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you would have... There's a number of different procedures like a Letts procedure a cold loop procedure as well. And that you would basically keep taking off the cells and so that it won't develop into
cancer.
So
here you are... After doing everything that was asked of you.
Yes.
And you have cervical cancer.
Yes.
And floored.
Absolutely. Totally floored. I had two young children at the time. Also, when I was told about it, I was brought into the office 30 kilometres away and not asked to bring somebody with me. And I was given that news on my own. So I had to get into the car afterwards, drive 30 kilometres, collect two young children from creche. And it was, you know, just I didn't know what was happening. And so I was also asked to whether I wanted to have a hysterectomy or a conservative management, I think they told me. And I was like, all right, OK. So I had to go home and make those decisions. I could barely see the road in front of me. Never mind. How do you make those decisions? Yeah. Who wants to have a hysterectomy? You know, so they were that's what I was facing. And then it was like, do you want a hysterectomy or do you want to wait and see? And I was like, what's wait and see?
And you had two young children.
I had two young children.
And had you plans yourself and Michael?
Yeah, we hadn't said yet that we were done. Yeah. You know what I mean? That,
exactly.
You know,
that's
not really a kind of a decision we made.
Some people do. Some people don't. You know.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. But you hadn't.
No. No, we hadn't said that. So it would have been nice, you know, trying to deal with all of that. And I suppose over the next, I didn't sleep for about a week, I'd say after that, just like, OK, what do I do? I found trying to get information very, very difficult because it was still caught early. It was cancerous, but it was still at an early stage.
And can I ask it, did you ask anybody why it hadn't been caught earlier?
At the time, no.
No,
not at all. At the time, you were just, okay, this is where we're at.
This is the cards that life has dealt.
Absolutely. It's like, okay, so you have to go home and kind of process that. I mean, there was no big meeting. It's like, you know, it was just factual information. This is it. It's cancerous. Mm. And do you want to have a hysterectomy or conservative management?
Okay.
And that was it. I didn't know what a hysterectomy was, nor did I know what conservative management
what
was.
What did you opt for?
I opted for a hysterectomy because I couldn't find any information. I had to go outside of Ireland to some English websites to get any information and what was the best thing to do. There was no forums really or anywhere that I could go.
No support.
No support.
That was 2015. Then.
That was 2015.
So you went on with your life and your hysterectomy.
Yep. Yes. And tried to, you know, get on with life and make myself more healthy and, you know, be very conscious of my health and everything. And then in 2019, during the summer of 2018 and everything that happened when Vicky took the lead off of everything.
It was April, 7 years ago.
Yeah.
And 2018.
I was following Vicky. I was very, you know, I admired her so much for what she was doing and still not knowing that I was a part of this. I didn't know at all that I was involved in it.
And of course, back then, the information was, we were being drip fed the information.
Absolutely.
So Vicky Phelan comes outside the court and she gives that statement.
Yes.
And then information unfolds, people resign, and then the true
yes.
extent of it.
Absolutely. And just even in our own county, like we had Emma Vic MacMahuna, you know, and I remember going to a rally for her in Tralee and, you know, kind of saying, oh, you know, we'll back this woman and back, you know what I mean? It's just disgraceful what has happened.
And bring us back there a bit, mm-hmm. because there was a real rallying of women in Ireland, wasn't
yes,
there?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
It was enough's enough.
Yeah, and I think everything resonated with women as well. And because Vicky was so strong and so powerful in what she was saying and fighting, what she was sick, well, she was essentially dying.
I read the chapters this morning in the book.
Absolutely.
And she's coming up with Jim.
Yeah.
Appearing in court and she's dying.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And she's been advised by everybody not to do it. And
absolutely.
She's going, they won't silence me.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And like what a wonderful woman and what like I personally believe that Vicky was sent to us. She was sent to the women of Ireland to just, pull up the drawers there now, lads, and fight. Don't take any crack. Like, don't be sitting down taking this now, you know, and stand up for yourselves and things like that, you know. So
you were at that rally.
Yeah.
For Emma Vic Mahuna.
And it was like, you know, it was kind of funny on the day and a bit surreal. It was kind of like nobody knew what to do, but we were all listening to, we were all kind of cheering and you know, everyone agreed that, God, it's a disgrace, it's desperate. And how do they do that to women? And, you know, so there was like, we were all being, I suppose, riled up. But nobody still knew what to do or what you could do. And, you know, I suppose for myself, I can say, oh, it'd be nice to do something or whatever, you know. And like, I think I wrote to Vicky a couple of times and responded to social media posts, you know, and, you know, thanked her for fighting for the women of Ireland and all of that, you know, without knowing that I was involved myself.
Yeah.
And I think during that summer or maybe late the next summer, there was something that was on the television and it was advertising that if you did have cervical cancer, you were diagnosed with cervical cancer between such a date and such a date to apply for the ORCOG.
So just to remind people, what happened was that women in Ireland who've been diagnosed with cervical cancer, they did an audit on their smear tests. So they went back over time to their various smear tests and, and, you know, tried to match up, make sure that they were correct.
Yes.
And in doing that, they discovered that a lot of them weren't correct.
Yes.
Vicky Phelan's, Emma Vic Bahuna, Stephen Teep's wife, Lindsay Bennett, yourself.
Yes. I wasn't included in the original one because for whatever reason, I wasn't audited, even though I did have cervical cancer. Not everyone was audited. So I think they picked up a lot of people after that with the RCOG, which for Royal College of Gynecologists were tasked then to do this report.
Right.
So a lot of other women were picked up in that who weren't originally audited, but should have been because they still had cervical cancer. And so then when I, like my husband said to me, he said, Lynn, you should apply for that. He said, you're one of those women, definitely. And I was like, I couldn't fathom it. I couldn't understand. And it wasn't until years later that I had it all blocked out. I had everything blocked. I just, you know, I couldn't understand how I was one of those women because my cancer was caught early. You know, I just didn't.
Not early enough, though.
No, absolutely. Yeah. It shouldn't have happened at all, you know. But
so they went back through, just because people need to be reminded about this, they went back through your smear tests.
Yes.
Prior to 2015, when you were diagnosed with cervical cancer.
Yes.
And discovered that you got a false negative.
Yes. I had a smear test in 2009, a smear test in 2010, 2011. And so because I had three clear smear tests, I didn't have to come back until 2015, early 2015. Yeah. So you had to wait a 3-year period after you have three clear smears.
Yes.
But as it turned out, those three clear smears and the 2015 were all read incorrectly in that they came back as negative, but they were all positive.
Okay.
And there's further levels within the testing that I have now discovered that originally they came back as being P1, but they were actually P9.
Okay.
So that's a huge jump.
Low as opposed to
absolutely
nearly top of the scale.
Absolutely.
So when you were informed, and it would have been different for you because that was another part of the scandal, wasn't it? How people were informed or not informed about it. How did you feel then? Because suddenly you were going to these rallies, communicating with Vicky Phelan, who's a hero of yours. Now you're one of those women.
Yeah. I at the start, I couldn't believe it. And I parked it for about maybe 8 weeks until after Christmas. Because I was told in November, I was told on the 26th of November, 2019. On the 19th of November, 2019. And I parked it for Christmas because I just didn't understand. I was like, oh no, I can't deal with it. No, that was all part of my trauma and part of not wanting to know what it was about and being scared as well. You know, what did it mean? What was it about? And I think for me, the huge thing was my cancer could have been prevented. And I specifically asked that at my meeting. I said, so you're telling me that if my smears had been read correctly, I would not have gotten cancer. I said, and they said, no.
Right.
And I just, I didn't know what to say.
So the hysterectomy wouldn't have had to happen.
No, could have had more children.
All that trauma you went through, which is immeasurable.
Absolutely. And with my children, my very young children who were very, you know, it was very, very difficult time for them, you know.
And all that said, you were one of the lucky ones.
Absolutely. Yeah. Which is a double-edged sword because you're kind of saying you're lucky, but really how lucky am I? Because, you know, as I often say, when you have cervical cancer, there's a lot of hidden things that go on for the rest of your lives. You may not have cancer now, you're cancer-free, but you have bladder damage, you have bowel damage. You know, there's some people who've had like severe radium and brachytherapy and everything there. You're broken.
And that was one of the things that Vicky did as well. She spoke very publicly about very intimate matters that she was affected by.
Absolutely.
You know, about intimacy, all those sort of things.
Yeah.
And that was important as well because we hadn't heard those stories before.
No, and there's a big stigma
about
cervical cancer and breast cancer, I would say, as well. You know, I'm like, some people can't even say the word breast. Or can't say the word vagina. Honest to God, it's ridiculous.
You see, I get sad when I hear when people say that.
Yeah, it's very sad. So I personally say the word vagina as much as I can. You know, I'm surrounded by boys at home. So, you know,
well, it's important that they have the proper language, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. But even with my friends, you know, it's an education thing, but it's also trying to take the stigma away from it. I mean, you didn't ask for cancer. You didn't ask for this, you know, but some of the things and some of the treatments for it are nothing short of barbaric.
Yes. And really. Lynn, that's an extra layer on top. Yeah. If you feel you have to hide this and keep it secret and you feel there's a stigma around it. So as well as the physical effect of it, there's this psychological element as well.
Yeah, and it's awful. It's hard to deal with at times, you know.
Yeah.
But are we coming around
as a country? You know, it's there's a lot of baggage to get rid of, isn't there?
There is, but baby steps, you know. And in some aspects, it is coming round. But I personally think that the key is education in schools.
Mm.
I think that's where they...
From an early age.
Absolutely.
Yes.
From an early age in schools and in colleges.
Yeah.
You know, to...
Yeah, just to get back to Vicky, because you said, which is brilliant, that she was sent to us.
Mm-hmm.
Because she had this unique set of skills.
Yes.
And experience, didn't she? Because she'd been through the ringer with the health system. She'd been in that near-fatal crash in France.
Yeah.
Her daughter had health issues as well. Yeah. And she had to deal with the health services on that. And she was this really bright woman.
Yes. Yeah. She was a normal, everyday woman.
Yes.
You know, she had an inner strength that just radiated out of her. And she took no prisoners, but not in a mean way, not in a bolshy way. She wasn't rude or aggressive or anything. She was just, well, lads, this is the fact and that's it. She was a presence without ever learning to be a presence.
Yeah,
you know?
And I spoke to her so many times and I never felt... She got angry, okay, mm-hmm. but she was never bitter. There was an anger that motivated her.
Yes.
And she channeled.
Yes.
Like, I remember she wrote that piece for the Sunday Independent at one stage, you know, and it was just this... You've probably read that, Fiona, have you, in your research?
Yeah, and listened to many of the members talk about their various different experiences and losses.
Yeah, yeah. Because it is, I suppose, when people talk about memorials, they immediately think of a statue or a monument. And I watched the video for The Forest That Won't Forget, and one of the ladies in it says, this is an anti-monument.
Yeah, so I suppose as artists working with the members, we were listening to the various experiences of people affected, but also listening to people's expectations of what an artwork could be. We had heard a lot of people talking about nature, the power of nature, going to nature in the face of bad news or difficult times. A particular woman spoke about having lost her daughter and wanting a place to go to bring a grandchild. And so I suppose we were all of these kind of ideas. Another person who'd lost their wife spoke to us about, asked us not to make a permanent victim of their wife. And over time, we're listening to different experiences. And the way Lynn describes, the experience of each member is so different in terms of their experience of cancer, or for the members who are bereaved, you know, husbands, partners, children, having lost someone. So I suppose as artists, you're trying to think what kind of an artistic response actually can speak back to this. And so the idea of a living artwork gained traction over time, a place to go, like thinking about people's experience of going to the artwork wouldn't, you know, like you describe a statue, didn't feel like that would be enough as an experience. And so I suppose based on what had happened, we wanted to reject the conventions a little bit of this kind of static, permanent kind of fixed object that exerted a particular type of power. Given what had happened, we were interested in maybe turning our attention to another type of power. Mm. And the power of the forest, the power of land and nature seemed more appropriate and interesting.
And the mad thing is, because I'm doing the garden at the moment, that like nature is defiant. Like it just keeps on growing, keeps on getting in those little nooks and crannies. It gets everywhere, doesn't it? You can't stop it.
It does. And the symbolism, every time we've gone to the forest as a group, you know, we've now purchased this land. We now own this 16-acre site in partnership with Home Tree, who are a nature restoration charity. And any time we have gone to the land, somebody finds symbolism. The fallen tree that is now giving life to something else.
Yeah.
The particular species that are interconnected under the ground, that are supporting each other. And that type of power and the resistance and the defiance that is found there, as well as the care and the love. And
how do you signal to people that they're in this place? Is there something at the beginning of it that people read or...
Not yet,
but there is the plan. Yeah.
Yeah. So right now we've purchased.
I've looked at it. It looks amazing. And it's an ancient oceanic woodland.
Yeah, it's stunning.
There's all sorts of things there.
So we haven't made anything. We're drawing attention to something that's already there. That's the anti-monument. Yes. And the meaning of what that will be different for people. And it will evolve over time because it's going to outlive all of us. I mean, it's this beautiful, amazing place. So right now, I suppose it operates conceptually as the forest that won't forget. Even if you never went there, it's there and it's doing what it does best. But for us, the ambition is also that it becomes this place to go. A place to go to remember a loved one, to remember a friend, to spend time, to meet another member, to go for a walk, but also a place that could do education workshops in women's health, that could be a host for
that's a big thing
these
that
kinds
you
of other
want
things.
To push, yeah.
And so for us, where we're at now is that we need to develop some basic infrastructure so somebody could turn up, park a car, go to the toilet, you know, like literally get in off the road and then access this wonderful
site. And you do need a trigger, don't you? You do need something that says this is where you are.
Absolutely.
Because walking around obviously is going to be the experience, but you need people, I suppose, to get into the frame of mind to remind them why they're doing it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so that's the thing. At the moment, we've costed and will be overseen by Hometree this ambition. And it's not to meddle with the land. That's very important. It's just to let us access it.
Yeah.
It's just to be able to get there and have signage and have basic facilities so people can spend time there.
And it's one. It's 297 metres up. It's north County Clare, north of Ennis, not too far from the Galway border, as far as I can see, is it?
Yeah, we're both shaking our heads. The Kerry person and the Dublin person.
Yeah, yeah,
oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
You take my word for it.
There's
Google Maps, you know.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
There's Google Maps.
It is this diverse site. I mean, there's ancient woodland. You can climb up this beautiful elevated plateau and look out over the burn. You know, there's this slab of peat that's been found. I mean, we just keep discovering things. Bog.
And to develop it, you have it now. You have it now. Who gave it to you?
So we bought it through some funding from the Arts Council and, you know, 2-to-1 plus as artists and the core group and the wider membership. Once the idea of the forest emerged, we then had to go find a piece of land that was worthy of being the forest that won't forget. And so there was a slight, a few trips around the country on the open market, looking at land in our wellies, thinking, is that it? And nothing seemed majestic enough. Nothing was worthy. You kind of thought, if people are going to turn up here in this young forest, it's beautiful, but it's not going to envelop you. It's not going to be the forest that won't forget. It had to have all these layers.
I love the name. Love the name.
It's amazing.
And, isn't it?
And when you actually see the place and feel the place.
You go, this is... But you had the name first.
Yeah, the name first.
And then we had to find the forest that was worthy of the name.
Can you remember walking into it for the first time?
Yes. Yeah. And this one came a little bit like you talking about Lynn being... Or Vicky being sent. This was a strange one because we had gone on the open market and we'd looked at land and we'd gone around all over the country. And then Hometree, who we'd partnered with, who are this amazing nature restoration charity, who we need their expertise to do this, because like to buy land, to have the right land. Somebody actually contacted them and had a piece of land in Clare that they wanted to sell to Hometree only because they wanted it to be held in conservation. Hometree said, it's come to us.
Yes.
And that's where it came from.
Uh-huh.
And so we went and met the landowner and he took us up and Lynn will tell you of the first moment where we a first tree was encountered.
It was amazing and like we had to walk, we had to crawl in through places, you know, the briars and everything. But we came across this tree and it was a crabapple tree and it was 100 years old, or it is 100 years old. And the man that owned the land was with us on the day and he said, oh yes, that's a 100-year-old crabapple tree and her daughters are spread everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And we were just like, oh my God.
And he said that unprompted.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, that's just the way he said it.
Yes.
And we were like, oh my God, this is it. And it was just so vast. And we didn't see all of the property on that day because there was places, you know, that weren't, I suppose, really very accessible.
Acres,
and stuff like that. And there's some new forest there. There's old forest. There's... it's just a magical, wonderful place,
brilliant.
You know, and
And you're fundraising to sort of develop it.
We are.
It's in its raw state here. And there's an idonate.ie. So it's idonate, the forest that won't forget will find it. And if you want to donate to it, a very deserving cause. So it'll be there forever. That's the thing. There's no rush. There's no rush on it.
Yeah, I mean, the urgency for us is we have all these ambitions of people being able to get there, spend time there, go and remember a loved one, go and meet others, go and none of us quite know what the potential of it is yet.
Yeah.
But we just can't do any of that until we develop some basic infrastructure. And so it isn't to develop the forest so
much as
to develop access to the forest.
Yes, of course, that's what I'm saying.
And so in that sense, yeah, we just need to get this 120,000. So obviously if there was one person out there with a checkbook who could solve that, we'd love it. But we also would love to just appeal to people who have any amount of money who might like to just be part of this. And really, the sooner it is, as you say, it's not urgent, but on the other hand, we want it to
There's
happen
momentum.
Because we
yes,
want to get
momentum,
there and we
yes,
want to get
yes.
there soon yeah. and we yeah, need okay. to get there yeah. soon.
And we can't open it up without that infrastructure in place.
And Fiona Lynn was saying about education that maybe down the road it might be used as a place for education.
Absolutely.
And you're pushing that and you're saying that people need to be educated from a very young age about this. And Gabriel Scally's report, he had loads of recommendations as well. We now have the HPV screening, which is better than the former screening.
Yes.
Are there audits been done again?
The audits have started back up. They were stopped in 2018 and they started up in, the people from 2018 up until 2021 when HPV testing started. All of the cohort people who are within that are now being audited and are now having their process, I suppose, looked at. They have personal cervical screening reviews. And all of the literature that surrounds that was done by 221 Plus members. And it was very important to us for us to be able to make sure that all of those women were being looked after and had information. Because one of the things that was a big problem for us is we got no information. We didn't know what was happening from one end of the day to the next. So at least they're going to go through a review process that is tailored for them by us with regards to the information that they gather. Obviously, all the scientific side of it and all of that is run by the cervical check.
And there is, with time comes change and real change because traditionally, I'm talking 50 years ago, the medical profession was mainly occupied by men.
Yes.
That has changed quite considerably over the last 50 years. So it means there are a lot more women in positions of power in the health services.
Yes.
That's a positive, isn't it?
It is, yes. Yeah.
You're not too convinced.
I think it's more about health needs to be more patient focused now.
Right.
Whereas before it was a lot, I personally think, about science and how you do things. But you need to consider people. Behind a diagnosis is a person. And how they receive that diagnosis will determine how they take it and can determine their physical health, their mental health. You know, so I think
it's back to you making the drive over to get the diagnosis. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And now it is changing and it's getting better, definitely. But more can be done. You know, I mean, they need to keep on top of it and more can be done because it is about the person. People receive news differently, you know, and it affects them differently. Some people can't even say the word cancer and that still exists, you know. So and that's all through education and through, I think, like the HSEI, I think, needs to do a lot for education and in how they bring things to people, how they deliver news, and that's all up to the individual, maybe doctors or consultants and everything. And that's going to change, you know, every time somebody becomes a doctor, that's up to the people themselves, I suppose.
The training, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah.
I would have an argument that just because you... and it's my own personal opinion.
625 points
just because
in the
you can
it doesn't
be
mean
a
you
doctor
should.
Doesn't mean you
well,
should.
Yeah, I'm with you on that right from way back. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was in doing a careers day in my son's primary school recently the question was, who's the most famous person you ever met, you know? And I was going all these, and I said, but the most impressive person I've ever met was definitely Vicky Phelan. And they were all only 11, 12.
Yeah.
They hadn't got a clue who Vicky Phelan was. And I felt a bit sad. And I actually told them to go home and Google Vicky Phelan and ask their parents about her because we need to keep her memory alive.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it would be done. And the other people who lost their lives because of the failures of the cervical check program. The first that won't forget, I donate, the first that won't forget, and good luck with it. It looks amazing. And there's the website there and people can watch the video and they might be inspired to donate as a result.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Fiona. Thanks, Lynn. Thanks
Thank
for coming
you.
In.
Thanks
Quick commercial
very much.
Break.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.